but I am afraid London is impossible. But I can manage Leicester quite well. I always go to Oxford via either Birmingham or Leicester. Both routes are equally convenient, or rather equally inconvenient, as there is a long wait at either station. If you can, I think the easiest way to find me would be to meet my train. There is no need for me to say how much I should like to meet you again.
I have managed to get my leave for Saturday, all right, though the Colonel would probably be somewhat surprised if he knew the real reason for my wanting to go to Leicester. You need not leave for Oxford before 2:30, need you? And we can go and have lunch somewhere in the meantime. I've just caught the regimental cold, which has made me very hoarse and inclined to the quiet voice. I am looking forward so much to seeing you. If I could not have got leave, I would have come without.
Oxford, 17th of January, 1915. Dear Roland, all yesterday evening, when, whatever my other causes of complaint, I had at least a comfortable room to sit in and a warm fire to dream over, I was thinking about you and your long and cold journey back again, and wondering if, when you finally returned, you would still think it had all been worthwhile. I feel as though I had all the advantages and you all the discomforts of yesterday. And yet I remember that in spite of all that, I again never thanked you. I was waiting for the inspiration of the moment when I finally said goodbye to find expression for what I meant to say. But then the persistence of what I will still call temerity surprised me into silence.
Further development of my cold has kept me in bed for the last 3 days. I don't really think the pilgrimage to Oxford had much to do with it. Do I still think it was all worthwhile? Can you ask? My return train was not due until 5:58, and so I took another hansom and followed in your wake. I went and looked once again at what little of Somerville is visible from the outside, and then walked down the corner in the High and so to Merton. I stood for a long time looking up at the tower, and wondering whether I should ever know Oxford otherwise than as a stranger. Grey walls and the ragged edges of the stone against the sky seemed so impersonal and unchanging. The forgotten waifs of a dead world where tomorrow is always as yesterday. I envied you who can live in this dream city. Lowestoft, 22nd of January, 1915. This morning we had a sudden order from the War Office for the regiment to move down to Lowestoft at once. I and another officer have been sent on in advance to make preparations. As soon as I get an address, I will let you know.
I was certainly rather surprised to see that the postmark on your letter was Lowestoft. I was quite alarmed, lest you should have obtained your desired transference to some other regiment, and been sent home on leave pending your immediate departure for the front. Do you know that the boy who was head of the lodge, I think his name was Thompson, when you and Edward first went to Uppingham, has been killed in action. I remember Edward was very fond of him. Sometimes I feel as though this war was claiming them all, the eloquent, the young, the beautiful and brave, just as the French Revolution did, but even more pitilessly and more universally. Can anything justify that?
We have at last got more or less settled down here. I am very comfortable, of course, but a rolling stone does not like to be forced to gather moss. I would give anything to be allowed to go to France. Doesn't Lindell say somewhere that you can get anything you want if you only want hard enough? I feel so ashamed of myself for still being one of the gentlemen in England now abed. I don't think you mean it when you say that you prefer I should not go. Lowestoft, 8th of February, 1915. I had a letter yesterday to say that Victor Richardson, Tar, is very dangerously ill with cerebrospinal meningitis at Brighton. Edward and I have arranged to go down there, though it is very doubtful we shall be able to see him, as he is still unconscious and must be kept quiet. I am feeling most distressed about him.
Please write and tell me as soon as you can what has happened and what you and Edward have done. I am very anxious and distressed for all your sakes, and can think of nothing else until I hear.
I am thankful to say that Tar seems decidedly better now. When he was brought over from Horsham, his case seemed quite hopeless. That was last Tuesday. Since then he has been delirious most of the time, but now is beginning to be conscious, although he cannot yet realize where he is. He persists in repeating commands.